Sure Shame Podcast, shining a light to the nations.
Shalom once again, everybody. I'm Bill Cloud, and welcome to our Torah Tidbit. This time, our Torah Tidbit is going to be taken from the portion called Ve'et Chanan, which means, "And I pleaded." The portion begins in Deuteronomy chapter 3, verse 23, by saying, "Then I pleaded with the Lord at that time," and this is Moses speaking, "saying, O Lord God, you have begun to show your servant your greatness and your mighty hand. For what God is there in heaven or on earth who can do anything like your works and your mighty deeds? I pray, let me cross over and see the good land beyond the Jordan, those pleasant mountains and Lebanon." Now, as the narrative here continues, and by the way, Moses is sharing this with the people of Israel, but anyway, God tells Moses that no, he cannot enter the land because years before, he did not sanctify the Creator's name in the sight of the people. Furthermore, he had told Moses not to bring this up anymore. He's done talking about it. Now, when it comes to God's name, and by that we mean his reputation, his authority, he's very protective of it, and we see throughout the scripture that he will not share his glory with another. That thought now brings us to our main point for this tidbit, and that is, our God is a jealous God. And so in Deuteronomy 4, we see this, "Take heed to yourselves, lest you forget the covenant of the Lord your God, which he made with you, and make for yourselves a carved image in the form of anything which the Lord your God has forbidden you." And it goes on and says, "Because the Lord your God is a consuming fire, a jealous God." And so Moses tells the nation to take heed, be aware of this fact, because he is a jealous God. Well, let's think of it this way. If Moses was not permitted to enter the land because of his error, Israel as a nation should be aware of the fact that God does not play favorites and that they should be very grateful that he is allowing them to enter the land. However, just because they're going to enter the land doesn't mean that they have been absolved from being faithful to stay away from all those other gods that they're going to encounter in the land. And so then in this passage and in many other passages, we are reminded that God is a devouring fire. Sometimes it is rendered that he is a consuming fire. Hebrews 12 comes to mind here, which by the way has positive and negative connotations. He is a fire that can destroy everything that opposes and resists him and at the same time validate and save those who are submissive to his will. So he is jealous in that he doesn't allow loyalty due him to be given to someone else. He's not going to share his glory. Now I want to read you an interesting comment in conjunction with this that comes from H.G. Wells, a very famous author. He said this, "None of the founders of the great heathen religions had any inkling of this idea of a jealous God, a God that would have none other gods." And so what he was referring to is the fact that the cultures of Greece, Rome, and others worshiped a myriad of non-jealous gods. That is, if they had been actual beings, that they were quite willing to coexist with other gods. For instance, when Jerusalem fell to the Romans, the government of Rome was quite prepared to give the God of Israel a place in their pantheon of gods. However, this could never be. And so, as a result, the Jews were always at odds with Rome. But what we see in this is that truth cannot make any concession to falsehood. It can't compromise with it, and it can't tolerate it. To do so would be to surrender to falsehood. And once that is done, the falsehood is going to expand. And that is why, for instance, there's a story of Hanukkah. That's why there's the story of the three Hebrews, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, better known as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in Daniel chapter 3. They would not coexist with these other gods because our God is jealous. Now, culture will concede a belief in God as long as God remains in his proper place, as determined by the culture. In my view, An example of this is the secular myth of the separation of church and state. Also, tolerance and coexistence, as it is now defined by today's culture. That has to allow for other gods and other views concerning God, concerning religion, concerning truth and morality, and for believers who are going to be true to the one and only God, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. We can't do that. We can't be tolerant because He is a jealous God. In Exodus 34, He said this, "For you shall worship no other God, for the Lord, whose name is jealous, is a jealous God." His name is jealous. That's one of His attributes. Where Israel of old was concerned, God knew in advance what they were going to do, and so, according to the text, they were scattered among the nations before they ever even entered the land of Canaan. But Moses warned that this scattering would be the result of their stale love and the subsequent idolatry. Those who were entering the land would not be as susceptible to this, but he said or inferred that later generations would fall victim to this, because those who came later, who did not see the miraculous things that occurred in Egypt or that occurred in the wilderness firsthand, would look back upon these events as nothing more than ancient history. Complicating the situation would be the prosperity that they would enjoy in the land. And as we have seen throughout history, any generation that enjoys prosperity, that prosperity acts like a drug and it dulls our spiritual senses. And that is in part what happened to Israel, prompting Moses to warn them that their commitment to God would grow stale. Now, likewise, Yeshua warned that His people, living in the last days, would repeat this error. He said this in Matthew 24, "And because lawlessness will abound, the love of many will grow cold," or Moses' words would be, grow stale. And so as a result of their growing stale and being insensitive to God's requirement to be true to Him, Moses declared that Israel would go into exile, they would be scattered, and would indeed serve these other gods, the works of men's hands, wood and stone. It would seem that he was telling them that if your heart is going to be joined to them, then you are truly going to serve them, because our God is a jealous God. And he would not share their love with other gods. It would be like a jealous husband or wife telling their unfaithful spouse to get out of the house and go be with their other lover if that's what they want. For this to occur means that God's people, those who have been armed with the truth, in order to gain acceptance from others, allow themselves to become polluted by the nation's values, rather than by God's standards and values. In the end, those who follow this path are reduced to worshiping something that is, in reality, inferior to humans, things that are beneath us, under our heels, so to speak. Moreover, God's people will end up acting like something that is beneath us. In some extremes, we'll end up acting like animals. So, because our God is jealous, we would do well to be zealous, that is, zealous for Him, zealous for His house. Because once again, He is not going to give His glory to another, and He's not going to share our heart with other gods, with other philosophies and other lifestyles. I have come to understand in my life in a very real way that our God expects from us all or nothing. And though we have all certainly been tainted with the world's values, we all need to submit ourselves to His devouring and all-consuming fire that we might be purified and transformed, that our thinking and our actions is conformed to His Word. We have to resist the inclination to grow stale, apathetic, and spiritually cold. Now, some believers in their zeal translate what I just said to mean that we should fervently and aggressively take issue with those who have embraced falsehood and idolatry. In other words, there are some who believe that we have a responsibility not only to be faithful to the one true God in our own lives, but we must also convince others of the hopelessness associated with their false gods and those false ideas that are existed in their lives. For instance, legend has it that Abram began his spiritual journey by smashing the idols in his father's house in defiant opposition to Terah's and most everyone in that society's belief. However, that is never addressed biblically, whereas his devotion to follow and to teach of the one true God is. My point is this: because Abraham lived according to the truth, those influenced by him could easily discern the lie of false religion and idol gods between the truth. In other words, it wasn't necessary for him to smash their beliefs. The truth did the work for him. Consider Paul's actions when he was in Athens and he saw that the people of the city were given over to idols, but he spoke to them about Yeshua and his resurrection. His only mention of their other gods was to point them to the one true God. In Acts chapter 17, it tells us this: "Then Paul stood in the midst of the Areopagus and said, 'Men of Athens, I perceive that in all things you are very religious. For as I was passing through and considering the objects of your worship, I even found an altar with this inscription, "To the unknown God." Therefore, the one whom you worship without knowing, him I will proclaim to you." So I wanted to read this to point out that Paul didn't break their gods or demean their beliefs or their false worship, but he used what they acknowledged as the means of speaking the truth to them. And as a result, many heard the truth. And we presume that some believed. And that meant they were able to discern between the truth and the falsehood of idolatry for themselves. Now, don't get me wrong. There are times that we are to break down the idols, the pillars, and the Asherah poles. And then there are times to expose lies and falsehoods by simply speaking, living, and upholding the truth. It is my personal view that we best serve our Father and others by clinging to Him and walking in a way that He is pleased with, not allowing righteousness to be supplanted by the need to be right. Rather than emphasizing the need to destroy something false, let us uphold what is true, or as Messiah put it in John chapter 12. "And I, if I am lifted up from the earth, will draw all peoples to myself." And so I would argue that being true to this, that is to lift up and to be witnesses of the one who is the way, the truth, and the life, to point people to the one and only God, is the surest way to allay any need for Him to be jealous of our thoughts and our deeds. So let's be careful not to say or do anything that would arouse His jealousy where we're concerned, because He is a jealous God and He wants all of our heart and all of our attention. And that's it for this week's Torah Tidbit. Thanks for joining me. Shalom.
Like what you're hearing? Become a BillCloud Premium Partner to watch or listen to hundreds of hours of teachings and resources on demand. Go to BillCloud.com/subscribe to start watching today.